This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This is the Besotted Pride of West London podcast. And we're coming to you from a very safe part of the world because we're safe. We're safer than Safeways. I'm even feeling broader than Broadway. My name's Billy Grant and I'm feeling so safe. Just like the Mighty Bees are safe. And I'd say the Everton are safe. But they're not in Forest. I'm not safe at all. And Lainey in the house, are you feeling safe, Lainey?
I am, mate. Yeah, very secure. I've got my alarm set. I've got my big jacket on, like extra safety. I've got the bars up against the windows. Right. No one can come in. I'm not going out.
Right. Seatbelt on. You feel completely safe.
Safe, yeah.
It's a nice feeling, even though, like I said to you, you know, we always had our feeling, but it doesn't matter because it's almost like when it's an actual fact. And I know that Brian and Bumo doesn't necessarily agree with us because he doesn't think that we're safe, because he's thinking we need to go out there and have the same attitude for all the other matches and smash the other teams up until it's mathematically true that we're safe. But as far as we're concerned, Brentford are going to have a catastrophic end to the season for things to go horribly wrong. And Nottingham Forest and Luton and Burnley and whatever happens, they're going to have to be like Real Madrid, you know, or Barcelona, or I was going to say Bayern Munich.
Leeds.
Well, yeah, we'll talk about Leeds later, maybe. Or maybe we might not. But like I said to you, anyway, this is the Besotted Pride of West London podcast. And the whole point of that little waffle and ramble there is the fact that Brentford, who went to Luton on Saturday, and they beat them 5-1, which means that we are safe, safer than we were even after the Sheffield United game. So everyone now can really relax. And it's interesting because even before that game, you felt that we were relaxed going into the game, but forget about going into the game. After the game, the relax, I mean, people are just lying on the floor. You can see those massages taking place. The relaxation was enormous, wasn't it, Lainey?
Yeah, you could tell. It was dressing gowns, it was everything, wasn't it? People putting their feet up by the fire. Yeah, no, it was just a wicked day out, wasn't it? It was, you know, we got our attacking prowess back. Brian and Bumo's just made such a colossal difference to us. And, you know, when we saw that there was no Ivan Toney again, you know, you kind of thought, this could be difficult. But it was the least difficult afternoon of our season. And I'm not buying into the Luton were awful. I just don't think we allowed them to start their game plan. We set about them from the get-go. They had a couple of chances, and you know, you expect them to in their predicament, and you know, with the intensity that you thought they were going to come up and out us with. But it just didn't happen. And as I said I'm not taking it that they were just awful on the day. I just think that we were really professional. We were potent. We've got several players that we've kind of waited for this kind of moment to arrive. Damsgaard and P, they're starting to kind of really look like like attack-minded players that are, you know, they've got width and ability. And I think that Brian and Bumo's reintroduction to the team, it's allowed that. You know, the ball goes to him. His first touch is just so brilliant, and he just, like, you can see defenders like gravitate to him, and he's always got an out. He'll play it back, and then we can switch wings, and it brings him being in the team brings so many others into the attack. And you know, I dread to think what could have happened to Luton if Ivan Toney was out there as well. It is scary that, you know, I'm sure you're going to come up with the XG stats a little bit later on, but if that was a 7 or 8-0 win or a 7 or 8-1 win, you know, there was a slip up at the end by Yanel, but I'm not ever gonna kind of allow that to kind of ruin what was an otherwise almost perfect afternoon. Atmosphere was great, vibe before, the vibe afterwards, it was just brilliant. And you know, it felt that we were in the right place, and it felt that Brentford had got their swagger back, and we looked a great team. And Wiese's first goal, my God, that shot, that rasping shot that kind of looped in from distance, and that Brian and Bumo threw ball for that, it was just beautiful. It was a great day, mate. And you know, I'm thinking we're going to do the same up at Goodison.
Oh, here we go. And we're going to maybe talk about that a little bit later. But tell you what we're going to do, because, you know, talking about that Luton game, we're actually going to sort of go away, come back and talk more about the Luton game, because we need to talk about that. But I think what's more important is the effects of that Luton game. Obviously, for us, it basically just elevated us. So, you know, we were out of that zone as far as I was concerned, and a lot of people concerned before that. But now we're properly out of that zone, because, you know, the teams that below us are going to have to win consecutive matches, and we're going to have to lose consecutive matches, and then sort of things are going to go horribly wrong and goal difference. Yeah, you know, even say there's a lot of things that are going to have to happen if things go horribly for us. However, you know, there was still activity going on in and around the bottom zone. Okay, we've got Burnley, you've got even your Sheffield Uniteds, you've got your Evertons, and you've got your Nottingham Forests, and you've got your Crystal Palaces who are also playing. Okay, they're all playing, and they all had an effect of what was happening at the bottom end of that table. And there was a big game that was happening on the Saturday that we were, on the day after we were playing, on the Sunday, actually, nicknamed El Corruptico. By some people, which was Everton versus Nottingham Forest, and those two were playing, and interestingly, you know, there was a time when those two, were getting together, because they felt that they were under the same pressures from the league, and they thought, we need to sort of join together and sort of put our fists in the air and all that. But all of a sudden, I've noticed there's been a fractious, it's been a bit fractious, where the Everton fans are just like, hold on a second, no, you're about to cheat, so we don't want anything to do with you. So all of a sudden, they've kind of gone off their own merry way. And the way that they needed to sort out the little punch up between themselves was on the pitch. And they did it on Sunday. Big game it was on Sunday. Whoever won that game was basically going to be out the woods. And whoever lost that game was back in the woods, battling with Luton for that final relegation spot. And the loser was Nottingham Forest. Everton won that game. So even with their points deduction, they're out the woods. You know, okay, yeah, there's a few more games left and they could be back in trouble. But in general, they're out the woods. So now Nottingham Forest are deep in trouble. But there is a lot of drama in and around that game to do with VAR, which is something that we've spoken about a lot. We've spoken about the fact that, you know, I was at the Premier League, probably not even 2 months ago, talking about VAR and how VAR could be better and how it's affecting the game and how they make decisions. You know, the refereeing decisions are terrible and they need to sort that. So we talked about a lot of these issues actually with the Premier League less than 2 months ago. And then we've got this scenario where there are some maybe questionable decisions, but Nottingham Forest have blown it all out of proportion, in my opinion, because everyone gets those decisions. Yeah, they're terrible decisions, but that's the way that football goes at the moment now. And they've blown it all out of proportion and they've made it all about them. And now there's malarkey to take place. And there's going to be, you know, Nottingham Forest put out a statement via a tweet, which looked like it could have been probably done by sort of one of their drunken employees. It looks like some people say it might have been the owner. We're not saying that at all, but you know, but it looked like one of those sort of dry, I'm going to tell the world. And they put out this tweet and it's just caught the news alike. And I know a lot of people might turn around and say, yeah, but someone's got to do something about refereeing. But it's kind of like, yeah, okay, we understand. But the reality is Nottingham Forest actually weren't very good. They weren't very good that day. They kind of didn't really have any very many chances, and they just weren't very good, and they haven't been quite good for a long time. So trying to blame the referees is kind of one of those sort of childish things that people do to try and deflect away from the fact that they're actually not very good. I mean, it was a bit ridiculous, wasn't it, Laney?
It was crazy, you know. I think it, you know, karma. The word karma springs to mind. They seem to have brought a lot of this bad luck, this bad vibe, this bad feeling about themselves. They've kind of reached for the siege mentality button, and sometimes it works. It does help you out. You know, them against the world. You know, again, it's the old Leeds analogy. You know, this is why we're, you know, we've said several times on here that, you know, Nottingham Forest have become the new Leeds, the Premier League. I think everyone's against them, and they're not. You know, everyone isn't against them. You know, there are decisions that go for you, and there are decisions that go against you. And you know, if I'm being honest, hand on heart, you know, that one, two, or three of those decisions that VAR didn't give were penalties. You know, it is they looked clear to me, but were they clear and obvious errors? If the referee hasn't given them, I don't. You know, I remember going to, you know, the City Ground early in the season and having at least one, I thought, clear cut penalty. And it wasn't given. And yeah, there was, you know, brouhaha afterwards about it. But then we get penalty, you know, or we get a decision that goes our way the next game. There is kind of, you know, these things do even themselves out. But it was an awful, you know, an awkward afternoon for Forest. But I thought Everton, even with those decisions, were the worthy winners. And to, you know, to start pointing, you know, in tweets, official tweets, saying Stuart Atwell was a Luton fan, and they've warned that he shouldn't have been on VAR that weekend, and to you know, to insinuate corruption and to insinuate kind of foul play. You know, I think VAR and I think PGMOL have got several important things wrong this season, but I don't think they're corrupt, and I don't think it's deliberate, and I don't think there is kind of manipulation of decisions and results. I don't believe that for one second. You know, are they inept at times? Do they get things wrong? Yeah, they do all of that. But so that's always been the case. There's always been dodgy offsides. You know, the history of football would be so different if there was VAR back in the day. You know, there'd be titles that wouldn't have been won. There'd be FA Cups that would have gone to replays. And, you know, the history of the game would have been very different if we'd had technology years ago. But I still believe that 90%, 99% of the time, they get the right decisions right. And I looked at a game earlier on in the week, I think it was, you know, the Leeds game, and they got a goal which was clearly offside, and you know, that would have been ruled out, and that would have changed the effect of the game. It would have ended up 3-3 instead of them winning 4-3, and you know, that's why we have it. Most decisions end up being the right decisions. But I think Forest have really brought this on themselves, and that they're looking desperate, if I'm honest with you. And I think this desperation does come from the ownership. I don't think it necessarily is the club itself. I think, you know, I think it's just the style of the way certain people operate now. And they're looking, you know, they say we're going to go and assess all their options. Well, they haven't got any options, have they? I mean, they can write another letter of complaint to PGMOL. They can write another letter of complaint to the Premier League. Been and gone.
They can go strike.
Well, okay. Well, then they get a bigger points deduction, you know. So I think their appeal is imminent. I think, you know, we find out the findings of whether they're going to get any points back. Their situation may improve, but I don't think it will. And they're looking down the barrel now. You know, I think we're all in agreement now that the Brentford and Everton now are out of the woods. So it's down to, it's three from four now. And you know, Nottingham Forest have Manchester City at home on Sunday. That's going to be a miracle if they get 1 point out of it, let alone three. So you assume that they're going to lose that. And you know, Luton are away at Wolves, Burnley are away at Man United. You know, Sheffield United are down already. It's looking like nothing changes this weekend. And there's one game left, so there's like 3/4 games left, depending on which team you're looking at the fixtures. It becomes mathematically difficult for them to get out. You know, their saving grace is that Luton can't start winning, but you know, Wolves are in a, you know, so-so kind of form. You know, if Luton win at Wolves, then it puts the old proverbial cat amongst the pigeons. But, you know, going back to the Forest situation on Sunday, they did themselves no favours. You know, I think they were hard done by, but they made themselves look idiots.
I mean, there's that as well. And I just also think when you start moving into conspiracy theory zone, you sound a little bit mad. And you know, I know, you know, people are going on about, you know, oh, you know, the football, Premier League want the money here, and it's just like when Leeds they were in the Championship, and they were going, oh, the Championship, the EFL don't want us to leave the Championship. They're rigging the matches and telling the referees to make us lose the whole time because we generate too much money for them. And it's just that really kind of mad, totally self-centered. It's all about us. We are just the best of the world, and everything is about us. There's no one else that really exists. It's just us, and the Premier League are trying to get rid of us. And I'm just thinking, you're just like, where did this come from? It's just madness, like, you know, and it's that whole, it's slightly kind of egotistical thing that you are the most important thing in the whole football kind of arena. Where are there are actually other teams. There's Luton, you know, there's Burnley, there's Brentford, you know, there's Crystal Palace. We think that we're quite important as well. So why has it become all about you? And why has everyone got that downer on yourself? And why can't you sit back and reflect and say, actually, well, these things we haven't done quite right, which is interesting, like I said, because they've done that recently. As soon as the owner puts his prices up, then they've turned around and said, actually, well, to be honest, we're not very well run. But this conspiracy theory, I mean, it's interesting. You know, you've got Stan Collymore, who used to play for Forest as well, didn't he?
He played for Forest,
but he's
Southend in Forest.
Yes. So, and he's, interestingly, he's kind of, he's been laying into their fans in a kind of constructive way, just saying this conspiracy theory thing is nonsense. He goes, you know, just like you said, yeah, the referees might be rubbish. They've made terrible decisions. They've been making terrible decisions for years. You kind of get over it. But as soon as you're moving into conspiracy theory, it just makes you sound like a fool. Like, you know, so he's kind of pulling them up on that. And I 100% agree with him. And I think you kind of just got to move on. I mean, you said to me a bit earlier, Bill, didn't we have like a number of decisions that went against us earlier in the season at a time that we really needed some points? You know, we needed a win and we got a draw. We got a loss, and we needed those points. We didn't sit down there and start going on about the conspiracy theory of the league because our stadium's too small, and really they probably want Leeds United. And you just kind of just go, oh God, that's a bit rubbish. Let's just get on with it. That's just kind of what you do. But, you know, maybe people act differently, and I think it's also to do with the people around you and how the clubs run. And I say that as well because, like, at the end of our club is run in a kind of quite level-headed way. And, you know, for us to go around and sort of kind of, you know, I'd be quite disappointed if Thomas Frank went around and said those things, or Phil Giles or Matthew Benham. I'd be quite disappointed if they said that out loud. Oh, yeah, it's a conspiracy theory. Because it's just like, come on, let's just get on with it. At the end of the day, there are different theories out there where, you know, there's the unconscious bias theory, which I do believe exists, where bigger clubs may get a different kind of favours done to them, to the smaller clubs, not necessarily because people definitely do it, but there's just this unconscious bias, almost like an unwanted or a respect given to other teams because of what they have done before and the size of them. So you may get a few decisions or everything like that against you. I don't think it's a conspiracy. I just think it's kind of one of the, and I think it's a completely different thing. I mean, do you think I'm kind of off the mark there a little bit, Lainey?
No, I think you're right. I think there is, you know, it's that familiarity, isn't there, where, you know, referees are on first name terms with players from certain clubs, and they're not with, you know, with others, and you know, there's many occasions throughout history where I can think of where, you know, the big club has got the benefit of the doubt, and they've got a big decision where the other club hasn't. And I'm looking back and looking at the highlights of the Forest game away at their place as we're talking now. You know, there's a handball that we don't get given. You know, it was clear handball, didn't get VAR, and then there's the foul of their goalkeeper makes on Yoann Wiesa. You know, he's about to clear it. Wiesa goes in. He's about to knock it in the back of the net, and their goalkeeper takes Wiesa out. Not given. There's two penalties in the first half at the City Ground where we don't get penalties, and this is the flip side of what happened up at Everton. You know, and I've had to go and research this. You know, once the game's ended or once the week's gone past, we've forgotten about it. Not forgotten about it, but just like. I think we're just all a little bit more worldly and maybe a bit more balanced to realise that that's just football sometimes. But So going back to your point, do I think that big clubs get the benefit of the doubt over the little clubs? Yes, I do think that. I think that happens in every club around the world. I'm not saying it's not inevitable, and I'm not quite sure what you do about that. But I don't think I'm sure that there isn't a conspiracy. There's not a dark meeting room in PGMOL or Premier League HQ where they're working out you know, what's going to happen in certain games and who they want up and who they want down. That doesn't happen. You know, it doesn't happen. You look at the bottom of that table. The teams that are at the bottom of that table are there because they're shit. You know, that they're there on merit. There's no one, even with points deductions, those teams with the points deductions, they've been trying to get relegated for 3 years in Everton's case. Forest escapes just about last year. Hopefully they won't again this year, but there's a good chance they will. There isn't a conspiracy. They're just not very good. And their cheating in their FFP has compounded that. They need to look at the ownership of the football clubs and stop pointing the finger at everyone else, because it ain't us. You know, we've said a million times on this podcast, we're playing the rules, we're doing it right, we're struggling just through injuries. We didn't go out and then blow the bank on replacements and gone, well, you know, we probably get more points than they're going to deduct from us, so it's worth the risk. You know, we've got a gambling owner. He's, you know, this guy's a, you know, gambling genius, if there is such a thing. And you know, even he's not done that. So you know, we're playing it fair and square, and they're not. So you know, it's down to who's running their club. It's not down to everyone else.
That's right. So, okay, listen, we'll see how it pans out. It's going to be very, very interesting next few weeks, as we're going to talk about a little bit later. We're obviously going to Everton on Saturday. You know, maybe we might be a little bit more relaxed when we go to Everton because we're playing Fulham the week afterwards. And maybe, you know, we blew a gasket at Luton and we might just chill out at Everton, which is what Forest fans obviously don't want to hear. And then we might focus our minds on Fulham. We don't know. We shall see what happens on Saturday. But anyway, Lainey, I just want to ask a question. How good are you at quizzes? You know, when you get sort of, you know, general knowledge questions, are you very good at that, do you think? You know, going down the pub and answering those?
Depends what the question is, to be honest with you, mate. Yeah, I'm normally very good. I've got strong subjects. I've got weak subjects.
So what's your strong subjects? Is it sort of ancient, Egyptian proverbs?
I would say strong subjects, geography, sports, especially football, especially Brentford.
Yeah.
Weaker subjects, I'll probably say, like...
Science?
action heroes, I would say. It's a weakness, particular weakness of mine.
Yes, that's so, right.
Yeah, a particular weakness.
That's right.
So, about yourself, Bill. I know you're perfect.
No. I mean, quizzes, I'm okay with quizzes, actually, to be quite honest with you. You know, quiz of the week and all that stuff. But
Live from Norwich.
That's right. Okay. But yeah, I wouldn't mind sort of like, you know, if I was to do like a music, an 80s groove, like, you know, rare groove and kind of sort of kind of soul boy. Yeah, very, very niche. Like, you know what I'm saying, okay. I'm actually very good at sort of, if you know, play the intro and like the first two bars of an intro of particular records from from the British underground scene, you know what I'm saying, from about sort of 1980 to 90, sort of 95 or something like that, play the first two bars and two notes, and I can name that tune straight away because I'm a little bit geeky like that, you know. Okay. But they don't do very many quizzes like that, unfortunately.
I don't think I've ever seen one. Right.
Have you? Did there'll be sort of three people watching it, like, you know, it's me and a couple of my mates, like, you know, Pricey and probably kind of Mikey. Helen LaPelle, Brentford fan, was in the final of Mastermind. Did you know that, Lainey?
No, I didn't. No, I failed that question.
There's one quiz that you failed straight away. Yes, she was as well. And there's a nice little interview with her in the Bees United newsletter as well at the moment. So go and check her out as well. So it just goes to show you, like I said to you, we've got a plethora of fans out there. And we've got some very, very geeky, knowledgeable fans. And like I said to you, Helen, she's fully masterminded herself right up. And she's got right in there. And she's elevated the profile of Brentford in another area again, isn't she?
Okay, well, maybe we need to invite her on and quiz her.
That's right.
Interrogator.
That's right. In fact, tell you what we might do is we might get her and JB to see who comes out with the best stats. And also, you know, maybe JB comes out with the Brentford stuff and she'll come out with stuff which is kind of related in a very vague way to Brentford, which might just scale the world, you know.
Well, there's a good chance she listens to this because every Brentford fan we know listens to this podcast.
That's right.
So, Helen, we'll get you on.
Definitely. We'll get you on between now and, 2087, which is when we're going to win the Champions League.
And if by perchance you're a massive drinker, then we'll get you down to the Besotted End of Season podcast. And we can quiz you there and then.
And the quiz of the week, indeed. So anyway, listen, loads to talk about on this podcast. We've got the Luton game, which we are going to talk about once again.
God, are we still doing the intro?
Yes, this is still the intro.
Wow, fuck me.
We're going to listen, the last intro is 40 minutes, mate. You know what I'm saying? So this is actually kind of snippet size compared to that one.
I thought we finished.
We got JV with his facts and his funk as well. We've also got the Gowler from the Bees Breakdown Posse, who's going to talk about Luton. He's going to be purring about Luton as well. And also looking forward to the game against Everton. And then we got Connor from the Toffee Blues Everton podcast, who recorded his piece for us, unlike the Luton person, who I'm not going to name, who didn't record his piece for us last week. So I apologise about that. But he had a little gap in the middle where he said, let's go to Luton. Actually, we didn't go to Luton because
5-1, that'll teach him, won't it?
He obviously knew what was coming. But you know what I'm saying? He just thought, I'm going to quit while I'm ahead. So there you go. So no Luton, but we've got plenty of Everton. And I tell you what, as well, Everton also had the manners to go out, and not only did they record one, they recorded two bits of audio for the podcast, because he said, I need to make up with this Luton person who recorded none, so I'm going to record one. So they actually recorded one, then he went, hold on a second, we've just smashed up the Liverpool, I'm going to do it again. So there you go, Connor's going to be gloating about the Everton victory over Liverpool. But anyway, I've got a little glass of red wine, I think, this evening, Lainey, and then we're going to come back and we're going to talk Luton. Kenilworth Road, Luton. What a day. And I have to admit, at the beginning of the season when the fixtures came out, and I was, you know, third season in, I was thinking, I'm going to pick and choose my games this year, my away games. I'm not going to do all 38 games this season. I might do 37. No, I just thought, you know, I'll just pick and choose. And Luton, I have to say, was one that I decided to choose not to go to. I've been there too many times in my day. And I just thought this season is going to be kind of like, just, you know, Luton will be down there wherever they are and we'll be doing whatever we am. And that game's going to be relatively inconsequential. Also, I think last time we went to Luton as well, it just such a bad, just bad evening. It was just so terrible. I just thought, I don't know if I want to go back there again. In a long time, it was just horrendous, you know, but things change because all of a sudden circumstances change. And it just goes to show you, and I'm going to say this again, it's probably indicative of where we are at the moment now as a team who is building to get to another place. So we're almost in a state of no man's land at the moment now. So yes, we weren't doing particularly well this season, but we were never really in relegation trouble. So you didn't really have those kind of dangers that Sheffield United had, so that any game that they won, it was like, hey, you know, so we weren't really in that kind of world. We weren't in the world where we're thinking we're going to get near to Europe. So you're kind of battling away and having excitement there. And for the last few seasons, in effect, we've basically been a mid-table side. So, you know, we turn around, go to our matches, enjoy ourselves. Very happy that Brentford are doing what they're doing, but you haven't got that oomph, you know, that you necessarily have when you're at the top of the Championship or the bottom of the Championship or the top of Division One or the bottom of the Premier League, you know, that kind of stuff, or fighting for the top four or fighting for Europe. You know what I'm saying? You just haven't had that. However, this game just gave us a little bit of that, because even though we beat Sheffield United and we were very happy, it's almost like this game, because we were out of the woods, seemed bigger than that, and the win was almost like much more important than the Sheffield United game, even though it's the Sheffield United game that made this game more important. Does that make sense, Laney?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. I mean, you know, we were looking at the fixture list, and you know, when we were looking down the barrel a few weeks ago, and you're thinking, where's the next points coming from? Where's the next win coming from? And where, you know, you're drawing with, you know, let's be honest as well, there was a particularly tricky set of fixtures as well. You know, we drew a home to Chelsea, and then we got Man United, and then we've got Villa, and you know, you're looking at that lot of fixtures when you've kind of forgotten how to win, really, and you're looking, thinking, this could be wrong, this could be going wrong, could be going pear shaped. But then you're thinking, oh, we've got Sheffield United, then Luton, then Everton. They're the games where we're going to pick up points, and that's the way it's transpired, because we always knew that we were too good, really, with our players coming back, and with our kind of like A team, as it were, with you know, Brian and Boomer. I'm not going to heap it all on him. Other players have become good, but I think his re-emergence has allowed that, as I said earlier, and players like Reguilon, Pinnock coming back. I don't think you can underestimate the impact of having Pinnock and Brian back. They're just immense for us. And then you've got, you know, Norgaard coming back into the team, and you all of a sudden you're looking like the Brentford that we know and love from last year. We're looking very much like we were last year. So it's just a relief. It's just a huge relief that we go to Luton, and you're right. I know I wasn't looking forward to it, and I said last week, but I saw it in a different light. We went to a couple of good pubs before. You know, you did your research, and it all paid off, and we had great breakfast with Paul, and thank you very much. And
yeah, and we went and extend really, really appreciate it. And I'll mention that point, because you're sort of kind of, you know, but the fact is that Laney also, we actually met on the train at 8:40, right? So at 8:40 in the morning, we were already on our way to Luton. We were in Harpenden, just outside Luton, before 9 o'clock in the morning. And to me, that is a proper away day. And one of those things that I've been very much missing, I think, in the Premier League, where people are just taking a lot of things for granted, including the away day. So for me, I'm just thinking, getting out of the house on the train, getting to where we're going before 9 o'clock was a biggie. And then obviously we got Spidey Holland as well, who met us, took us back to his house, met his wife, and cooked us a lovely breakfast and everything like that, which was great. A nice little tea up, talked a bit of Brentford as well, in the Holland's pad just outside Harpenden, somewhere in the middle of Wheat Hampstead, I think it was, like, you know, near to Brockett Hall, which is actually where Alicia Dixon got married to Harvey from So Solid Crew. And I was at that wedding, actually, but that's a separate issue altogether as well. So that's just down the road from Spidey's house as well. And then we went off to Harpenden, and we were still in Harpenden by just after 10:30, which is brilliant. We met the Scary Carey and the crew in a pub. There was a few bees already lined up in the boozers at 10:30 in Harpenden. I was very impressed by that, which is all good. And after that, it just kind of went, well, it went uphill from there, didn't it, Lainey?
Yeah, and we weren't drinking at 8:30, 9:15, but you know, we were in the pub for, you know, just gone 11, so it was responsible drinking to take place, I believe, I sort of remember. But yeah, no, it was just a really great early start to the game, and we, you know, at that stage we don't know how the day's going to pan out, and we're still expecting Luton to chuck their worst at us. But you know, as you'll hear shortly from the Luton fans that we spoke to, or you spoke to after the game, they were just in awe of Brentford, to be honest. There was, you know, they were kind of properly tipping their hats to us, and they said we're the best team they played this season. And I you know, you have to remember they gave Man City a proper go at Kenilworth Road.
Arsenal.
I'm not going to call it the Kenny, which seems like it's overly familiar for a lot of pundits are calling Kenilworth Road the Kenny, like it's like they've got the right to call it that. I think Luton fans can call it that if they want, but yeah, everyone else calls it Kenilworth Road. So I think Arsenal had to really dig deep to get anything out of that. Get their visit
Liverpool
should have lost. So you know, we came out of that with Luton fans going, my god, you've got some team there, and I'll have to turn around to you, Bill, and say yes we have indeed.
So
it's
about time we're able to go and show the world again what we're about, because they've got short memories, but we got long memories, because we watch our team every week. We know exactly what they're about, and Thomas Frank knows exactly what we need. And tell you something, you know who else knows exactly or knew exactly what we need is the fans in the pubs and in the stands after the game. We're going to go back to Luton to listen to both the Brentford and the Luton fans as to what they said straight after that match.
Never in doubt, never ever doubt if we had any chance of going down for the last 4 or 5 games. We've started to turn in some decent performances, getting players back, playing our really strong football.
We were fantastic at 5-1, flat as Luton, to be fair. It could have been 10. I thought we were brilliant today. We went at it, we were at it the whole way through. We never stopped going for it. I think we were just magnificent. It was a real shame about losing a clean sheet in such a sloppy way, but we made a right racket. Luton, for them, they would have seen this as a winnable game coming in. You never heard their fan.
Very disciplined performance. I thought they came with a game plan and executed it perfectly. And to be honest, we look different class to them. We're getting players back, and it shows you know, just when you get people like Ethan Pinnock back, Christian Norgaard, you know, it makes a big difference, and that's what we've been missing. We must make sure that we don't suffer like that next season with the injuries, but obviously we're safe now, and it's a great feeling, and I shall definitely be having a glass of wine tonight.
I felt that we had a big result in us. I felt this season, there was always one game in the season we were going to tonk a team, and I felt today was going to be
team tonking
our day, 4-5-0, and it's just a shame we let that goal at the end. But that's a 5-0 performance. I have seen no doubt we had no pressure on us here today. Injuries coming back, coming off a win, Evic was aligning for us, and the lads stepped up. I can't think of any player out there today that didn't perform. Everyone stepped up. It's a physical game. Luton aren't a bad side. They played, I think they had more possession, they played it around. Physical team, not dirty team, physical, and our lads stepped up to that. But you can see the quality, the difference between the two teams. Fantastic performance. I think that we could have beaten anybody today.
It's good to see the confidence now is starting to flow. We're as a unit, as a team, we're playing really well. We're hitting form now at the business end of the season, and you know, those horrible games we've had, this is now making up for it.
And I think we took our goals well. We could have had a few more chances, but 5 away from home, who's going to balk at that?
Straight away, as soon as that whistle went, we was on them. We were creating chances.
how we weren't like 4-5 nil up in the first 20 minutes is on beyond me. Crossbar, off the line twice, you know, every player put a shift in there, you know, and we took it into the second half. You know, I must admit, I was a bit surprised at Luton.
No, you're just quality today. You're quality. On the break, you're brilliant. I tell you what, all season, this is the first time we've been outplayed. And we played Liverpool, played Man City, we played Arsenal. Today we were outplayed from start to finish. And I can't take that away from you. You were quality today. But, you know, once the third goal went in, before the fourth goal went in, you looked like fucking Brazil. We were just taken apart. You were good today. And
what an incredible performance by Brentford and Brentford fans, I'd say, today. I think there was only one team in it from the minute we kicked off, and that lapse at the end that allowed them to score, that's all that stopped today being the perfect performance, I think.
Well, one of the best away days I've been to ever. And to be honest, this season it's been needed. And we went out there and we showed class, and we went out there and showed them how it's done. 5-1, what a game. Best game of the season, honestly. Perfect.
So there you go, in the stands, the proper old school stands of Luton. And when we're saying old school, I mean, I had to keep on crooking my neck to sort of guide it around the post that was in the way, that was sort of, that was obscuring the goal that was in front of us. Like, you know what I'm saying? It was proper old school. It's like Griffin Park days, you know what I'm saying? If you were in the New Road or in the, I don't know if the Braemar Road actually had the stands in front of you. I don't know if they did, but the New Road, definitely you had to think that sometimes you had to look around the stands, you know, at the poles that were there to try and kind of get a view of the ground. And Luton was very much like that. You know, we definitely had an obscured view marking on our ticket. And I thought, how's that going to be obscured? But now I see exactly why it was obscured. But it's still good because the vibe in that stand was next level. It really was. 1,000 fans, really tight, singing, dancing, having a laugh. It was just old school songs, new school songs. The atmosphere was great, you know. And like I said to you, I know a lot of people weren't able to make that game as well. But in a strange way, it kind of shows you as well when you kind of bring it back to kind of the kind of crowds we were getting in the sort of bigger games in the Championship, when we were taking like 1,000 fans away and 1,200 fans away, which was a big crowd for us when we did that away, other than Fulham, when we took 7,000, but that didn't count, you know what I'm saying? But in effect, when we took sort of 1,200 away to an away game, you got a proper atmosphere where people just were in it, hardcore, like, you know. So and I thought, you know, again, I'm not harking back to Championship days, but I was thinking that's actually a good feeling, a nice tight stand. Everybody in there is having a sing-song. I mentioned on the podcast, it's not like Liverpool where 1,500 of the fans, you know, tickets have been sold to Liverpool fans or people who like Liverpool. So you're standing there with basically fans who didn't even support your team. So the atmosphere is horrendous. Now you've got a stand which is half that size with everybody making noise. And it was a tremendous atmosphere in the ground. And you can hear from the excitement of the fans how excited they were and enthralled, both Brentford and Luton fans, after that game as well.
Yeah, it was just wicked. I wouldn't have wanted an unrestricted view, but I think it was the blur of goals going into the back of the net that kind of obstructed my view. And I had an incredible day, and it was surrounded by good people, and we just had a laugh.
That's right. Let's tell you something. Let's go to JB, because JB had a good day as well, and he actually was mentioned to me, and he said to me, it was just too potty, you know. And he was so potty, he says, and I've never heard JB say potty before, that he just sat down, he went home, and then he just came up with all sorts of ridiculous stats and facts for his facts and funk. So I think let's go over to JB and let's hear the plethora of facts he's got for his facts and his funk.
Hello, Jonathan Birchall back again. On average, you need to go to 120 Brentford away league games to see one where we'll score 5 or more goals. There's never been 18 of them. Since our biggest ever away win, the 7-0 at Exeter in 1983, Saturday's 5-1 at Luton is one of only seven we've had since. There were the 5-3s at Darlington in 85 and Burton in 2017, three other 5-1s at Plymouth in 94, Huddersfield in 2016 and Hull in 2020, and we also had the 5-0 at Preston in 2021. In our original five top-tier seasons, we scored five or more in just seven games. And in the Premier League, we only had the 5 in the 5-2 win against Leeds last season. And in all eight of those wins, they'd all been at home. Luton was our first ever top-tier 5 on the road. Also, in our 160 top-tier away games, it was the first time we'd ever scored four more goals than the home team. We first visited Luton for a non-league fixture in 1902. Including those Southern League days, in the EFL and in Cups, in 52 of our previous visits, we'd never scored more than three. The exception is the Tier 3 game in 1933, which ended in our highest ever league draw of 5-5, with Jack Holliday credited with all five of our goals. Saturday, in Game 34, it was the first time this season we'd gone in leading by two goals at half-time. We hadn't even scored in the first half of our previous five games. Scoring five is more remarkable as we hadn't previously managed to score four in a game this season. Having beaten Luton 3-1 at the G-Tech, we completed our first double of the season. We're now five unbeaten, our best of the season. Wisser became the first player to score two open play goals in a game this season. The only other brace was Bryans back at Fulham in game two, one of which was a penalty. Wisser's current return of six goals in nine games is his best in a Brentford shirt. Ivan Toney has made it to double figures in each of our two previous Premier League seasons.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Back in the 1930s, Jack Holliday, Di Hopkins, Dave McCulloch, Bobby Reid and Billy Scott did likewise. So Johan Wisser reaching 10 goals makes him only the seventh Brentford player to break double figures in the eight top-tier seasons in our history.
There you go, JB. I mean, he's reeling them off. There you go. You know, you just it's almost like, you know, you go to Luton and it just kind of opens something in his mind. And there you go. It's like the Grand National. You know, the horses, they've gone,
you see, JB's done a bit of modelling today.
He's been modelling one of the old school, because JB is old school. He knows the old school facts and funk and the new school as well. He's been modelling one of the old school Brentford shirts, the old school, the sort of burgundy sort of kind of Burnley esque,
claret and bluey kind of thing.
Yeah. So I wonder if he's got any sort of, you know, maybe we can ask him next week to give us a little bit more stat information on the size of the stripes on that shirt or something like that. How many shirts had sort of stripes of a certain thickness?
Yes, let's get him on to do some shirt facts and funk next week, I think.
That's right. Okay, we'll get him on because we haven't got many more podcasts left. So he needs to keep him going, crank him up, doesn't he?
Yeah, exactly.
Definitely. Yeah. So, but anyway, listen, going back to the Luton game, because we'll talk about that Luton. So, that Luton game, right? So, Laney, okay. So, I'm going to just, first of all, I'm going to go to whoscored.com and I'm going to talk about the top performers in that match. And according to whoscored.com, that's whoscored.com, the top performer was Johan Wisser with 9.3.
Wow.
Yeah, right. Okay, he's like on a next level. There we go. And then there's Brian and Boomo, 8.9. Sergio Reguilon with 8.5. Christopher Ayer with 7.7 and Damsgaard with 7.7. So all the top performers, unsurprisingly, are Brentford fans. But it's just interesting to see where, you know, I mean, I thought Wieser was on fire. The defence was definitely terrified, and they definitely thought he was right up there as well. Total shots, we had Keane Lewis Potter with 4, Ayer with 3, Boomer with 3, Chong with 2, and Pinnock with 2 as well. Tackles, we had Damsgaard, who was on it, mate. He's 7 tackles from Damsgaard. Then you had Doherty with 5, Yanout with 4, you had Regulon with 3, Ayer with 3 as well. And Boomer was top of the dribblers with 3. And then we had a load of Luton fans, which I'm not going to mention any of their names, who were on 2 as well. So, but you know, so that's kind of where we are with that game. Just talking about, you know, Brentford players. I mean, Laney, I mean, I know we talked about Brian and Bumo. He was the person that every single Luton fan just talked about in the pub afterwards. They said that was, how do you mean? We just said in Bumo. He said, oh my God. They said, he is just on another level. They said, we've not seen anything like it down here. He's just come down. He's just terrorised us. Your team is better than, you know, Man City and Arsenal. They just gave us all the plaudits. But it's lovely when somebody else says it, when we're trying to tell other women, like I said to you, I go to Radio 5, I go to Monday Night Club, you know, I talk to Mark Chapman, I talk to all these characters, and I try and tell them, and they're like, yeah, Bill, rose-tinted glasses. But it's brilliant when it comes to the fore, and the plan comes together, and then people actually really see them real football fans. Forget them pundits who just watch it on Match of the Day and they see little two-second clips. Proper football fans who go to football week in and week out tell you those things, because for me, their opinion is much more important than these pundits who are in and out and just got a soundbite, because that's just the job that they do. Brian and Bumo was brilliant. Johan Wieser was unbelievably on fire. But I'm thinking also we should mention the fact that we've had a few players come back in. Okay, so Pinnock, not only did he score a goal, but defensively we realised what we were missing, didn't we?
Yeah, well, you know, He is too good in his aerial prowess. Is too good to be taken out and not have an impact. And we were just waiting for him to come back. And you know, to see him start was just a huge relief, because we knew, you know, we thought we were going to get loads of balls pumped into the area, and he was the one that was going to kind of not bail us out, but he was an insurance policy against that aerial bombardment because he was so good. And that's exactly what happened, you know. And not only did he prove it in his own area, he came forward and he headed a goal as well. And you know, seeing the Brentford players pushing forward to come in front of the Brentford players, he's quite, you know, I think he's just shy. Or he's not a sort of big braggadocious kind of player. So he's a modest player, and you know, the players pushed him to come and, you know, to come and accept the, you know, adoration from the away end, and he did that. And you know, at the end with, you know, the players come over. It's not something that we see all the time, but it felt right to do it then. So yeah, to have Pinnock back in the team alongside Nathan Collins, who, you know, he looks more dependable in recent weeks. He's not throwing any rickets into the spokes, and he's getting his game together. We need to see him now against better teams. You know, let's not forget we have played Sheffield United and Luton the last two games. So, you know, we face a different proposition up at Goodison at the weekend, and then we've got a series of, you know, in brackets, more challenging games, you know, Fulham at home, then we've got Newcastle and Bournemouth, and you know, we've got those kind of games coming up as well. So yeah, you know, Regulon again, he looked good. As you said, Damsgaard, he looked on it, you know. Jensen and Yanelt, they looked well inside their comfort zone. Yanelt's one little mistake at the end let Luton in for their goal. And then KLP, he took his goal well, but then he blazed one wide when he should have scored before Wieser did score. So you know, a bit more from KLP still. He's improving. You know, it's nice to see him out on the left rather than, you know, left wing back. He's in his kind of natural position. He's earned his right to be included in the starting 11. Whether he retains that with Jardine and Bumo, looking like they're both fit now, and seeing Sharda come on and score was really important. You know, that was a big thing. So yeah, we're looking good, mate.
Yeah, and talking about Sharda, I mean, Sharda came off the bench and he scored a goal as well. Again, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, it's not promising for us, but you could see kind of where we're going. You know, we talked about Sharda was a big miss for us. He came out the side. He was injured. He's been injured since, I believe it's September. It might be even August, actually. So he's been out of the side since August until now for the whole season. And he was meant to be our kind of like, right, Sharda's here. You know, Ivan Toney's out, but Sharda's in. Oh, no, there's no Sharda. You know what I'm saying? So that's a massive miss for us. So for him to come back and, you know, play a little role and score a goal, that's all very, very positive. Like, you know, Keane Lewis-Potter, like I said to you, you know, I mean, 7.5, you know, who scored gave him, which is, you know, which is all right. It's respectable. Reguilon, talking about that, we talked about him a couple of weeks ago, so we're not going to go into him too deep. But again, he is showing the kind of player that, you know, is, you know, we're going, hold on a second, you know, this guy could actually do a job for us. Whereas beforehand, a month ago, we were thinking, mate, absolutely no chance whatsoever. Again, 8.5 the who scored gave him, but he was causing problems all over the park, you know. So, you know, there's a lot of positivity happening within the Brentford camp, you know, at the moment now. And like I said to you, as we go into these final three games of the season, for me, we've got three games this season, but for me now, the job's done already. There's only one other job that needs to be done, as we know. It's Fulham in a couple of weeks' time. We can't come down to our place and embarrass us. So as far as I'm concerned, I'm quite happy for the team to just chill out a little bit, take the plaudits, right? Chill out this weekend if you have to, as long as you go into the following weekend and absolutely smash the Fulham off the park. Because for me, that is the absolute key. Because I enjoyed myself so much last Saturday at Luton, before the game, after the game, going back to Harpenden, you know, meeting our Luton buddies as well, like, you know, Dan and Roz and all that lot. We met them beforehand, and we met my mate Steph as well, who used to look after Tall Paul, and Alex P as well, and all them people as well. He did a little gig for them in Harpenden a couple of weeks ago, which I find really bizarre. You know, Alex P in Harpenden. So, okay, all right. Okay, you know what I'm saying? If you know exactly what I'm talking about. But yeah, stepping out with all those characters, you know, Club Chopin and, you know, Dan the Man and all those characters till very late on Saturday night. For me, that enjoyment was so much. I could take, you know, whatever that left Everton, as long as we deliver.
Come on,
as
come
long
on.
As we
raise
can...
your expectations.
No, it's not that. I'm saying, you know, if you want to give me one or the other,
I don't think they're mutually exclusive. Mate.
Everton or Liverpool, Laney. If you Everton or not Everton, Liverpool. Everton already smashed up Liverpool. Everton
or Fulham.
Everton or Fulham. Which
yeah,
one?
Yeah. Well, Fulham all day long, but it's not. There is no either or. It's, no. I think it's both. I just don't. I think we've become a different Brentford now. It's, you know, Brentford of 6 weeks ago, you'd say you choose one of the two. I just think that they're going to build up a head of steam. And let's wait and see. Let's see what happens. But I think you need to crank up your expectations now, my friend.
Okay, I think what I'm doing is I'm cranking down the expectations, because I think that they've blown themselves out so much for that Luton game, just so much. And this is going to be after the Lord Mayor's show, so I don't want to get too disappointed.
I think Everton have done the same against Liverpool. They're you know, that was the game they wanted to win for so many reasons. You know, they'll want to beat us as well, but you know.
Listen, going back to the game, Luton, they were effective at creating goal scoring opportunities through individual skill, but where their weaknesses were, they committed a high number of individual errors. Brentford, we created a high number of chances relative to our possession and also stole the ball often from the opposition. We're effective at creating goal scoring opportunities from through balls and also from counter attacks, and also goal scoring opportunities from set pieces. And we were strong at finishing, but we committed, believe it or not, a high number of individual errors, which we might not get away with if we were playing maybe a team who was probably, you know, a lot higher up the table. Luton attacked down the left-hand side, and we favoured long shots, attacked through the middle, had a high shot frequency when possession, favoured crossing the ball, and favoured through balls as well. So that's kind of where it sat with us for that Luton game. Tell you something as well, because we've talked a lot about this Luton game, but what we're going to do is we're going to go over to the Gowler stateside. Bees Breakdown, who every week he puts his Bees Breakdown tactical and analytical article up on besotted.com. So check it out now. It's really good. And he's done the Luton article. So it's up there now to go and check it out. But he's going to tell us, in his own words, the tactics, the analytics, everything about that Luton match. Also, he's going to look forward to the Everton game.
Hey, this is Jacob Gallagher with Bees Breakdown. So for that Luton review, the Bees created plenty of chances against Luton in a variety of different ways. So Brentford built out of the back, they pressed high up the pitch, they took advantage of set plays, and I was really impressed with their counter press as well. The Bees overperformed their XG for only the 10th time this season, but this was Brentford's best shooting performance by far. They overperformed their XG by 1.9, and their expected goals on target was 5.06, which just shows how clinical Brentford's finishing was. And Mbeumo leads the squad with 9 goal-creating actions this season, and although the statistic XG plus minus is a skewed statistic with a lot of other variables, Mbeumo's is plus 10.5, meaning that when he's on the pitch, the Bees have created 10.5 more XG than they've allowed. So it's nice to finally have some of these players back from injury and see them put it all together on the pitch. All right, so for that Everton preview, they've scored the second lowest amount of goals so far this season. They've just been heavily underperforming. They scored 13 fewer goals than expected, but they are coming off 2 wins against Nottingham Forest and Liverpool, and Sean Dyche's mid-block always gives Brentford trouble, so the Bees will probably look to take advantage of Everton in transitional moments, and when out of possession, expect more direct play yet again, since Everton have attempted the most long passes. And similar to Luton, they send in a lot of crosses. So not counting the midweek match against Liverpool, where Calvert-Lewin scored a header off a corner, Everton has created 13.5 XG from corners and another 7 XG from set pieces, which is somewhat due to the fact that they have won the most aerial duels in the Premier League, and Calvert-Lewin has actually won the most out of any player. So luckily, a backline consisting of Ayer, Collins, and Pennant gives Thomas Frank a good chance to win some of those aerial battles, but that's definitely something to look out for.
So there you go, the Gowler, Jacob Cowler, stateside, Bees fan, knows all what's going down statistically and tactically with the Bees, and he tells us all, and a lot of people, no, tell the world, because then they're going to just beat us. Doesn't work like that anymore. if teams ain't doing this, then they're just in all sorts of trouble, to be honest with you. So as you said, you know, I think XG wise, you know, we know that we created a lot in that game. XG, I'm not sure what the Gowler said there, but I think it was 3.14 to 0.59. Luton did score a goal. It was a bit of a fluff on the Bees' behalf, you know. Pretty much we gave the ball away to them, ball comes back and they beat the goalkeeper, 0.59. So they didn't create a huge lot in front of goal. Just looking at the shot chart there, they had about, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, they had 4 or 5 shots in the area, including the goal as well, one from outside the area. That's all that they had. So 5 shots is that Luton had, whereas we had quite a few, but we didn't have as many as, I can't remember where it was, I think it was Man United, where we had about 7,422 shots, you know. Mm-hmm. We still couldn't score a goal, but we still had, you know, 12-13 shots in the area, including 6 very much close on the 6-yard box, you know, some big high XG chances, you know, Kevin Sharda, you know, 0.69 or 0.44, so basically 1 out of 2 of his shots would have gone into goal. We had Keane Lewis Potter, who scored 0.63, so 6 out of 10 normally would have gone in the back of the net. I mean, some proper good, really good opportunity chances. Ethan Pinnock, his was actually 0.1, which is goal, so 1 in 10 normally hit the back of the net. So fair play to Ethan for that as well. So his was kind of relatively kind of a difficult chance, but he actually still managed to slot it in the back of the net. So which is all good. And look at another opportunity as well, was Johan Wiese, who scored from outside the area as well, and his was 0.08. So it was, you know, 8 out of 100 of those normally hit the back of the net. So again, and the way that he took that as well was just phenomenal, which was great. So, you know, tell you something, you know, really, really proud of the team, exactly what they've done there. We can probably talk about that Luton game from now until probably till the end of the season.
Mm-hmm.
But we need to stop talking about Luton. We need to look forward to our next game, which is going to be Everton. Everton, we're going up to Everton on Saturday. It's going to be a 5:30 kickoff. It's going to be on the television, and we are looking forward to that game now because we know we can relax because everything is nice and relaxed. You know what I'm saying? We're going to go away. I'm going to have another sip of my wine. We're going to come back and talk about Everton. Everton, Saturday, 5:30 kickoff. They've had a big game. They've won their big game. We had a big game. We won our big game. Everton on the big game front.
Who's had a big game?
Right, we both had a big game, but I think on the big game front, Everton's going to turn around and say to you, yeah, you might have had a big game, but we've had a bigger game. We've had a bigger win than you because we've basically stopped Liverpool from winning the title. Whereas what you've probably done, you may have relegated Luton to the Championship. Now, which one is a bigger W? That is a big question. And I would argue relegating Luton, probably something that we didn't want to happen, especially after the away day, because we do base our kind of footballing world on the quality of the away day. And if we enjoy away day, we don't want teams to be relegated from our league. So Sheffield United, we're gutted about because it's a great away day, but they're going to be gone. You know, whereas Leeds United, really rubbish. And we're very happy they're gone. And we're keeping our fingers crossed that they never come back again. Anyway, Everton on Saturday, Laney. They've got a big win. You believe that they may have blown a gasket. Do you think that we're going to get a result out of this one? And why do you think that?
Yeah, I do. I think we could get a really good result out of it. I say that because I watched the game last night, and they weren't that good still. You know, they were okay, you know. They were okay against Forest. And the goal, if you've seen the goal that they beat Burnley 1-0 at home, it was just the biggest gift in the world. The goalkeeper shot it against their player and it ended up in the back of the net. That was the winner, 1-0. So they've won three games recently at Goodison, and they deserve probably to win all of those games, but they didn't look particularly great in them. They looked average. and then Liverpool, they just literally were just a shadow of the team that we saw earlier in the season. So, you know, Liverpool deserved what they got, but, you know, that wasn't the Liverpool that's got them to, you know, within, you know, kissing distance of the title. You know, it was always Man City's title. It was when were the challengers going to fall away, and that's the way it's come. Arsenal's a bit stronger than they were last year, but probably still not strong enough to go the whole distance. But you know, evolving. But Everton, yeah. So I'm thinking that they've done enough to survive without being particularly good, and we go there and I think we're still better than our recent form. We're getting stronger, and I think that their kind of feel that they are safe now. All their effort was going to go into that game, and rightly so on last night against the Reds, and they come out and they've got an incredible result, and so fair play to them. Let's see how Saturday pans out. But I'm actually really excited to see us again, because I think now we're the Brentford that we know and love, and I think I'm hoping and expecting some better and bigger things for the rest of the season.
So Lane is giving his thoughts on the Everton game. I might give my thoughts after we hear from Connor from Toffee Blues Podcast, because he is very happy. He's very happy indeed. They've got point deduction and they're still not in the relegation zone. They've just beaten Liverpool, which is their big rivals, and they're not in the relegation zone. Nottingham Forest have got all sorts of stuff going on, and reductions in points and less points than other people have been given, and all sorts of stuff.
They've got confused. A reduction in dignity as well.
Yeah, and then they're still above Everton. So Everton are very happy at the moment now. So we're going to go over. We're going to speak to Connor from the Toffee Blues podcast, and then he's going to give us the lowdown on Everton.
Hi, my name's Connor Williams from the Toffee Blues podcast and YouTube channel, where we cover all things Everton. We do opposition reviews, player reviews, scouting videos on potential players, do videos with people from other footballing channels such as Besotted Bees, and talk about the opposing team and their players and all that good stuff. So that's at the Toffee Blues on YouTube, Twitter, all the socials, so check them out. I'm on here today to talk about Everton and talk about if I'm happy this season or not. At the time of recording this, it is the morning after the Merseyside derby win at Goodison Park. So at the minute, I'm quite happy, but I'm trying to keep it leveled and not be hyperbolic about it, because I'm absolutely buzzing. It's the first time in 14 years that we've won there. The last time we won there, I was like in high school, so well long ago. But yeah, as a whole for the season, I think it's an okay season. I think the points deductions isn't ideal, which has put us down the bottom. I think we'll be safe now because of the win last night. Luton would need to win three of their next four games. But in hindsight, and they've got us to play, so we could make a big part in that. But even, I still think it probably doesn't definitely make us safe, but it probably does. The points deduction, unfortunately, has put a bit of a downer on it. You can tell it's affected the players and the coach and the fans mentally. We have had a couple of good games, though. That run where we were first taking 10 points off, we went on a bit of a run under Deitch and got 9 points back pretty quick in our next three games. Other key matches, I think beating Forest last week was important for us. And then going on to beat Liverpool last night was huge. Not just in terms of the 3 points, which is obviously massive, and the fact that we've probably almost definitely ended their title run. But also because a 14-year, 14-year streak has been broken. It'll give the players and the coaching staff confidence to go on now to Brentford, who I think is a plausible game to win. Even if we don't, we've got Luton as well. So it gives us confidence going into these games of, we've just beat Liverpool, who are challenging for the title, who we haven't beat at home in 14 years. If we can beat them, we can go on to beat anybody type of mentality, which I think is what you need when you're down at the bottom, especially with these last couple of games to go. Down at the bottom, third time in a row that Everton have been down there. It's not been as bad as last year. Last year we were safe on the final. We were only safe on the final day. That was far too close for my liking. The season before that, we were safe with three games to go. I think it'll be mathematically similar this year, where we'll be safe, hopefully, with a couple of games to go. So there's nothing to play for at the end of the season, which would be nice, because last year against Bournemouth was a bit too much for myself. But yeah, that game on, the rivals down there have been tough. You've had Luton, who've been giving it a good go. Luton, everyone thought at the start when they came up, they might be a potential for the derby record, and they've done anything but that. They've, gone out and fought for every game, which I commend them for. You've got Forest, who have been a tough outfit as well this season. I think Burnley and Sheffield United are done, although Burnley are picking up wins recently. I think they're done. And Sheffield United gave it a good fight against Manchester United, but quality prevailed there in the end. The Forest game was massive. Beating Liverpool was monumentally huge for us. And going into Brentford, if we can win that, they will be three huge games in the space of a week at home that we've won. Whitwood seals off. And it just shows what a home advantage can do for players and the fans. So I think we still need one more win just to absolutely put it beyond doubt. But on the rules of probability, I'm thinking, probably okay at the minute. Obviously, like I said, the points deduction is why we're down there. Us and Forest, myself, and I think I resonate with the fan base a bit on that I don't think they're completely fair. Listen, I won't argue and go, it's unfair because we're a well-run club. We're not. Our owner hasn't ran this club well since he came in. He can't even properly see off a sale. We're struggling to get a sale through because he's picked what looks like to be charlatans to sell to. So I'm not going to tell you that Everton are a well-run club and that it's, you know, not our chickens coming home to roost, because it could be that. What I disagree with is the fact that we're, one, having a sporting punishment with points deductions for a non-sporting offence. The costs are related to the stadium, which, unlike Forest, who's were found to have breached it due to transfers, that is an on-field punishment for a, you know, sporting advantage. We, and they've said this in the commission, didn't gain a sporting advantage because it's for a stadium. So I feel like the points deductions for that are harsh. Maybe a tax would have been better, or a fine, because, you know, it hasn't improved us on the field. We haven't gained anything. I think as well, to be honest, the mitigating circumstances were somewhere really beyond our control. Usmanov was our naming rights sponsor, who was going to give $200 million for just naming rights for the new stadium. He was also funding the club through his other means of advertising and sponsorship. Pretty much was where we thought we were getting a large part of our money from. The Ukrainian war broke out and Russian oligarchs got sanctioned. We weren't to know that. At the time that that happened, the stadium was, you know, halfway to three quarters of the way built. People go in, oh, well, you know, you shouldn't have built something you can't afford. At the time, we could afford it. By the time we got sanctioned, you know, he'd got sanctioned, you're not going to tell people, right, lads, leave the half-built stadium. Don't touch it now till we're ready again. It could be there for years. It'd be a waste. You've got to push through now. So that's what we've done. In terms of Burnley, Luton and Sheffield fans, we've not overspent, so I don't feel sorry for them. The only thing I feel sorry for is the appeal process takes too long. You could have a situation where Luton don't know how many points they need, think they're safe. The appeal comes back, points are given back to us or Nottingham Forest, which will see them go down. Nottingham Forest and ourselves don't know where we stand, but neither the Luton, and for that I feel sorry. But let's be brutally honest, if a points deduction wasn't hit with us, we'd be 8 points clear of Luton than we already are, and Forest would be 4 points clearer than what they already are. So Luton would have been gone a long time ago. They're only still in it because of the points deduction, so I don't feel that sorry for them. I do think, though, that we're starting to realise, with Forest and us, that it is the top six versus the rest of us. We're stuck in a situation now, and you're seeing it with the other clubs who are a bit cautious of being caught like we've been, where they're planning on selling their best players in the summer to the top six just to keep out of the PSNR sanctions. That just helps the top six grow and kills the competition from below. And the only way you can really avoid that is to be like a Brighton or a Brentford, which is fantastic setups for the club and a really sustainable way to build the club. And I'm envious of Brighton's project. And I think what you guys do at Brentford is very, very brilliant, clever as well. You created, you know, brought in the money ball aspect, which is fantastic. And buying players that are underappreciated and undervalued. I think that's a fantastic way to go, but that takes years of building up. You know, so we could do that, but that would take years to come, whereas we've decided we've got the money, we're just going to put it in. Once the stadium comes up as well, that'll help us, more tickets in the gates. We'll be able to rent the stadium out to stuff, you know, gigs and stuff like that. The income from that will be amazing. So, but I do feel like, you know, when you see Chelsea, who are getting past it by all sorts of dodgy means, hotels and all that, and you see City that are going to win another Premier League title, probably, possibly, at the time of recording, and an FA Cup, it does sort of smack you in the face a bit when you're being deducted points and they're doing that. We've got Sean Dyche. I really like him. I know some of our fans don't. I don't fully understand it, because I think he's everything Everton fans want. He instills a team that work hard, fight, they're physical, they take the most out of their set pieces, they love their heading goals. They loved counter-attacking football and trying to hit hard on the and quickly on the transition. He speaks brutally honestly as well in about himself, the players and the situation. On paper, he's what a lot of Everton fans would describe as their ideal man. I think he is unfortunately tainted by a wider perspective of this idea that football can only be played one way and it has to be pretty. It doesn't. Football can be played any way to get you a win. At the end of the day, it's a results game and results are what matter. He has had a tough season. I think the squad have had a tough season. He said that, though. He said after the 6-0 to Chelsea, to the players, he was brutally honest and was like, do you want me to get sacked? Am I going to be another manager you see out the door? Or are you going to get your acts together and change history? And since then, they've done that. So, you know, you can't knock him for that. And I think he's got the great skill set to build, to set us up for, hopefully, the next manager, who I hope will be in a couple of years because he's still got work to do, and will set us up to go back to where we were. The actual squad itself needs a bit of improvement, especially for the way we want to play. I think we need a bit of pace down the sides, down the wings. Dwight McNeil is a fantastic football player, but he is being asked to play nearly every game and is looking exhausted sometimes. Jack Harrison, I've not been overly impressed with. I think he needs to be a bit, and I don't think he's got the pace. Fullbacks, that right-hand side is really rotten, because behind him, we've got either Ben Godfrey, who's not an attacking fullback, or we've got 38-year-old Seamus Coleman or 38-year-old Ashley Young. That right-hand side really needs some sorting out. Do I think they could be doing any better? Only about a position more. I think the squad is limited. There are some players that I think have had a bad struggled, but are better than what they've been producing. Obviously, Branthwaite and Onana are fantastic players. I think they'll leave in the summer, unfortunately. Branthwaite especially, I like them both, but Branthwaite especially is destined to be a really, really brilliant Premier League centre-back. He has all the tools, in my opinion, to be one of the best we've ever seen if he carries on the way he's going, and certainly one of England's best centre-backs in a couple of years. Onana is a fantastic midfielder as well. I think he's slightly limited to the way we play. I think with a bit more freedom, he could really show his skill set. I think the likes of Dominic Calvert-Lewin as well, fantastic players that have struggled with injuries and off-the-field stuff. Fantastic to see him get a goal at the Merseyside Derby. Really deserves it. And I hope he can get back to what he was, you know, the form he was in, because he's a fantastic lad and seems like a great person. You know, so it's there. It's there. There are some players that excite me. There are some players that I think need to probably move on in the summer as well, and some players that I don't think we should be trying to get, aka Jack Harrison's loan. I wouldn't be making that permanent. Last time we played, we beat Brentford earlier on in the season in September. Tarkowski, I think, and Dominic Calvert-Lewin got goals. I thought we played well. I thought we got a set-piece goal. That's our biggest threat, is set-pieces. I'm not too sure how well Brentford are at defending them, but you have to be really on top form with us, because we have this sort of blueprint at the minute where we swing one in deep to James Tarkowski, who will header it back across the danger zone and normally into the likes of Dominic Calvert-Lewin or Abdoulaye Doucouré to knock it in. Really, really good, because Tarkowski wins most of his aerial duels, so you're guaranteed to win that ball and then putting it back in the danger zone where, you know, that 6-yard box, anything could happen. You know, it could even be a Brentford player or another opposition player that puts it in. In terms of Brentford this season, I'm shocked to see where you are, because I think you're a good outfit and a good team. And like I said, I really am envious of the Brentford model and the Brighton one. But I know that you've had injuries. I think the biggest one you're missing is Ben Mee. Obviously, you missed Tony for a large part while he was suspended. But I think you've had players step up like Wissa and Mbeumo, who stepped up as well. But I think Ben Mee, you've missed loads at the back. I've liked him ever since his Burnley days. I think we should have got him instead of Michael Keane. And then when people were raving about Tarkowski back in like 2016, I thought it was Ben Mee that deserved the plaudits then. He saw out two really good centre-back partnerships at Burnley. So I think you're missing him. Players that concern me from Brentford, I mean, I've got to say Wissa, haven't I? He's in such form. I like Onyeka as a midfielder. I think he's a really good combative midfielder. Lewis Potter as well is a very good young player with high potential. And Bumu as well is a fantastic player. I think those two, Wisser and Mbeumo, have really stepped up when you've needed them. I think the game will probably be a draw. I've got 1-1. I'm hoping for a win because that will guarantee our safety, but I can see it being a draw, to be honest. I can see it being 1-1. But I've been Connor from the Toffee Blues. Thank you for listening to me, and thank you to Billy and the lads for having me on Besotted once again. An absolute pleasure to appear on your podcast, boys. All the best for the end of the season as well. And bar when we play you, I hope you have a good end of the season. See us.
So there you go, Connor from the Toffee Blues podcast. And we were talking a bit before, Laney was saying about, you know, how we're going to beat Everton because they've, you know, maybe they've focused on that Liverpool game. You know, we've focused on the Luton game, but we've got a little bit more recovery time than they have as well. But I just want to point out, and that's why I'm a little bit nervous about Everton and their strengths and weaknesses. Everton, very strong at attacking set pieces and at creating scoring chances. And also in the air, they're very strong and protecting the lead. They're very strong. And they're also strong at stealing the ball from the opposition. Where they're weak, keeping possession of the ball, avoiding offside, avoiding fouling in dangerous areas, and they're very weak at finishing scoring chances. So they attempt crosses off and take a lot of shots. They play wide down the right, take lots of long shots, long balls, and they pretty much keep the same first team. So a lot of things for us to worry about there for Everton. You know, again, considering they are the position where they're in, but then you have to remember they're in the position they're in because of the points that have been deducted. If not, they would be, you know, very safely mid-table, if not even a little bit higher. So you can kind of imagine that's kind of probably pretty consistent with kind of where they are without the points deduction. And there are a few dangers there for us. The one thing I'll say, with Ethan Pinnock back in the side, I feel a little bit more comfortable with the aerial duels and the set pieces scenario than I would have been maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, when that was a major problem for us.
Yeah, I mean, our record against Everton is not particularly good, is it? You know, we beat them at their place 3-2, and we've beaten them, you know, at Griffin Park, at the G-Tech in our first season up. But they seem to, you know, they beat us earlier in the season, they bashed us earlier in the season, and the game at their place last year was 1-0, and it was a 1-0 defeat. And we gave away a ridiculous goal from what I remember. So although they've been struggling, they've done okay-ish against us. And, you know, you compare our record against West Ham compared to our record against Everton, you know, you would think Everton were way worse than West Ham, and then we'd be do a lot better. So they're scrappers. They know how to dig in deep. They know their strengths and they know their weaknesses. And in recent years, they seem to be kind of in damage limitation. Certainly under Dyche, who's like his role there is to just keep them up, and he's done an incredible job considering what's been sacked against him this year. And it's interesting to see Thomas Frank singing his praises today and just saying that, you know, he's got a lot of time for Sean Dyche and what a lovely guy he is. And I know that you met him for a drink after the Forest game.
In Nottingham, that was.
In the Nottingham game, yeah, in the City Ground. And you said what a nice guy he was.
Lovely bloke. Yeah.
So, you know, I think his kind of on-screen persona is very different to his actual persona. I think he isn't the gruff, angry, fighty man that he looks like he is at times. I think he's a very decent bloke, and you know, if Thomas Frank likes him, Thomas Frank's I think is a pretty good judge of character. So going back to the game against Everton, you know, yeah, it could be attritional, but I think we can both have that kind of end of season vibe about us. We can actually play in a different kind of game plan than the game that could have taken place maybe 4 or 5 weeks ago. I think both teams know that they're, you know, apart from some sort of miracle of losing a 20 goal advantage and losing every game, and the other team the other teams around us kind of, you know, hammering, like Nottingham Forest beating Man City 6-0 just to take a chunk out of their goal difference. I mean, these things aren't going to happen. So we can just approach the game in just a little bit more of a chill vibe, which, you know, it could be a really cracking high-scoring game. That's what I'm hoping for and hoping we win.
Yeah, so, I mean, talking about high-scoring game, give us a score prediction, Laney.
I'm going to go 3-1 Brentford.
Oh, 3-1 away from home. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go 2-1 to the mighty Bees. So, yeah, there we go. Listen, this is the Besotted Pride of West London podcast. We've had a good week. We've had a great week. We've had lots of fun. And tell you something, also, it's much better when all these things happen towards the back end of the season, because that's, you just remember these things. People will end up forgetting the middle part, the murky part, the horrible part, the dark part. They'll remember the fun back end of the season. So, like I said to you, Forest was fun. Sheffield United was fun. Hopefully Everton's fun. Hopefully the F word, Fulham, will be fun. And then we'll just take it from there. But like I said, this is the Besotted Pride of West London podcast. My name is Billy Grant. I'm here with the Laney Man.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Good evening to you too. Don't forget to subscribe on all good podcast channels and also buy us a beer, besotted.com/beer. Thanks to everyone who has bought us a beer. It went down very well in Luton, I could tell you that much.
Not enough people did buy us beer.
We're very grateful for you for buying us a beer, everybody. So thank you very much. And it's good to meet, to bump into all the people at Luton as well.
Those Laneys, we had a platform full of Laneys. Do you
that's
remember?
That's right. If you check it out on prideofwest.london as well, the post-match podcast from Luton, you should definitely check that. It's about 40 minutes long, but it is brilliant. From the stands, the people that are celebrating, the Luton fans in the pub, you know, who, to be fair, the Luton pub that we went to was quite, it was Moody. Full of, it was quite old school, let's just say that one, and yeah, it was full of characters, let's put it that way. But we know how to negotiate characters, and we got inside there, we got in, we chatted to them, we had a laugh, we got out, and we were all fine. But it was very, very
You made me laugh. How many times did you say we come in peace?
Listen, you know, I had to set my stall out very early on, like, you know what I'm saying? So it's just, you know, it's very difficult walking to a pub when you've just beaten a team 5-1, stick a microphone under their nose, and then just kind of just carry on as normal, as maybe somebody from Fulham or somebody else might do. But you've got to do it very tactfully and very respectfully. So, and that's what we did. And we were there, and we had a good few drinks with the Luton fans before we headed back to Harpenden. But like I said to you, this is Besotted Pride of West London podcast. Thank you very much for listening, everybody. We will catch you at the weekend. Liverpool, their games. Come on, UBs. UBs, let's beat them toffees if we can. UBs.
Send Forest down.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.